Blog Talk Radio.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you played pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, you're going to regret, because I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, you're on up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." The devil opened up his case and he said, "I'll start this show," and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings, and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in, and it sounded something like this. Johnny said, "Well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granted, if you don't fight, don't count no." The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat, and he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best as ever been." He played, "Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. The chicken in the bread pan, I'm picking out dough. Granted, we a dog fight, no child knows."
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Imploding the Illusion. I'm your host, Raquel Okiai. This is a Wynn World Integrity News Network production. First, I want to say welcome back, Dallas Stidham, who's been on, just not been able to do the board for me for a few weeks. So I just want to say welcome back, Dallas. You can come on and say hi if you want to. So glad to have you back. We really need you, and we really have missed you here at Imploding the Illusion. I also want to mention that it is Good Friday, so I hope everyone has a great Easter weekend, and for my Jewish friends, that you all have a great Passover. It's really a nice time to spend with family and friends, and I'm certainly looking forward to the weekend. Tonight we're doing a show about father's rights. I have a friend on Facebook who made a post a couple of days ago. Okay, he's chatting with me on Facebook. I'm waiting for him to come on. Okay, hold on. Colin, yes. And I was very concerned. I mean, it's something that I've seen over and over again, and that's that we have a situation where dads are kind of being pushed out of the family, bio dads, whether it's family court, custody court. Mom finds new boyfriend, new husband, and dad gets put out of the picture. So we're not talking about a situation of a deadbeat, popular word. Fathers are confused of being called deadbeat dads. But in reality, I'm talking about the dads that want to be a part of their kids' lives, and the courts and moms reject them for no good reason. Those are the dads that I'm talking about, and those are the dads that need a lot of help. And I think that my guest is on. And I'm going to go ahead and put him on in 1 second. His name is Ryan Scott. He's a dad from Illinois. But before I do that, and the reason why I talk about father's rights on Imploding the Illusion often, it's because it's a really big problem. So you have politicians talking about, you know, immigration, illegal immigrants being separated at the border, and they're so concerned about this. But this is a stat that I think they should all be concerned about, and all Americans should be concerned about. Children absent their biological fathers are on average at least 2 to 3 times more likely to be poor, to use drugs, to experience educational, health, emotional, and behavioral problems, to be victims of child abuse, and to engage in criminal behavior than their peers who live with their biological or adoptive parents. So this is children absent their biological fathers in their homes, and they are susceptible to all kinds of terrible things. So it's something that I think society has to really look at, because dads really do matter. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and put you on, Ryan. Thanks for calling in. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rachel, this is Ryan.
How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Really concerned. This father's rights issue is an important issue to me. Ryan, because it's such a big problem. And it's not, you know, sometimes you might think it's an isolated case. I wish it was. But these aren't isolated cases. This is going on across America. Dad's being pushed out of the family. So I'm going to go, what I'd like you to do, Ryan, is just tell us a little bit, tell us a little bit about yourself. And if you could just give us a little intro into what's going on with you and your case. And let's see if we can brainstorm some ideas to help you out.
Yeah, sure. Well, and it's interesting that you said something about it being you wish it was an isolated case. The play in words there is that it is not an isolated case. This is happening to millions of fathers across the country, and mothers too. There is a small percentage of women who experience the same systematic kind of oppression that's happening to non-custodial parents. But in terms on the wordplay, it is a very isolating experience. It is something that it's so overwhelming and so burdensome to yourself and the people that are around you, in terms of finance, you know, financially, socially, and even in terms of mental health and things, that it is very isolating. But to go kind of
right
into what, you know, and it's you know, like I said, it's a kind of a play on words, but it is something that a lot of people don't really see, because and it is isolating, so you're not really exposed to it. And so a lot of people aren't really talking about this problem. I noticed, you know, you always see something new on the news. There's always a new fad or a new trend, but never is it about, you know, parental rights. It's never about, you know, it's always that you had mentioned something about, you know, the children at the border, they're being separated from their families. And that's kind of almost being used as a political ploy or a tactic. But there are children that are being separated. And now I don't want to take political sides here. But and some would argue that those people are breaking the law, and so, you know, that they deserve that or whatever. I'm not saying that's my position, but that would be an argument. Whereas you have fathers and mothers here in the United States who have broken no laws. They have committed no crime, and they are still being separated from their children, in my opinion, based on a financial reason. So anyway, to go kind of into what my personal situation, and again, I don't want to talk too much about it in terms of in detail. I don't know if I'm sure your listeners are not aware, but recently I was issued a call a restraining order, and I'm sure if fathers out there are listening who are experiencing something similar that I'm going through, you're all too familiar with the restraining order and the protective orders. But recently I was ordered, basically my First Amendment rights were trampled on, and I was issued a gag order not to speak on this. And recently that was lifted because it was shown to be unconstitutional. So anyway, about my personal situation, my son actually just had a birthday on April 14th, so he just turned 5 years old. And out of the 5 years that he's been on this in this world, I would say that I've missed about at least 90% of it. So we're talking.
Oh, that's so sad. I'm sorry to hear that, Ron.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, I'm not searching for sympathy, but I want change. I want something to happen because it's unacceptable. And like I had mentioned before, I've been ripped out of my son's life or vice versa. He's been ripped out of mine, and there has been no crime committed. I've never been charged criminally. There's never been any issues of domestic battery or, you know, anything like that on my behalf. There's no, you know, there's no drugs. There's no violence. There's no evidence of risky behavior. So all these things that you would think that they would say, well, those are good or abuse, you know. These are good reasons to keep a parent away from their children because they demonstrate or exhibit those behaviors. None of those exist. None of those are present. Yet
I don't even keep. I mean, even convicted men or dads in jail get more rights than dads outside of jail. So even if you're not convicted of a crime, yeah, you make a very valid point, and I want to reiterate it, and that's that. You all, parents, go to court, whether it's a custody battle or a divorce battle, but when there's children involved and the courts get involved, as you mentioned, because of the money issue, more money goes through family court than any other court, all other courts combined. These attorneys and judges, they keep these cases in the courts for 10, 15, 20 years.
Yep.
And all you're doing is paying lawyers fees to battle out all these little details. When really,
well, I'll tell you what,
you know,
I don't even have a lawyer.
That's what
I don't have a lawyer because
I
can't afford one.
Okay, got you. What I've seen with other dads is that the court system literally breaks you. It breaks you down, and then I just don't see any reason for it. It certainly doesn't help the children. It just lines the pockets of everybody involved who's in the industry.
And it's just terrible.
There's no outside. I don't think that there's any outside oversight. There's no real oversight about what's going on in family court. But how did you end up there? Was it a custody battle? Was it a divorce case?
I'd rather be involved in criminal court at this point, because there is no oversight. So as you had said, to kind of expand on what you said, you know, I don't even have a lawyer because I can't afford one. And I had hired one. He charged me $3,000 for two hearings and did nothing. So they're all, you know, they're kind of on the same team. But at this point, you know, these people don't even hide their corruption. I've sat in court. I can't tell you how many hearings I've sat through. And I've heard these people talking under their breath to other attorneys, other judges and things like that about, you know, basically these peasants, these people, they're beneath us. We're putting the wool over their eyes and we're taking their money, and they have no shame, and there is no oversight, and it operates much like a corporation, rather than a constitutional court, because it's not a constitutional court. So you have there's no audio, there's no video, there is no, and I'm speaking personally. I know there is in some of these courtrooms, but in mine personally, there is no audio, there's no video. There's no one to oversee the judge's decision. You know, the only person you can go to at a certain degree is a federal court, and then that costs more money. But when you have so much, you know, we're not talking about child support here. That's a whole different ballgame. We're talking about, like, for instance, in my case, I have a guardian ad litem, and she charges $325 an hour, and she bills for every little tiny thing, and it adds up. So now we're at thousands.
Let me make this clear.
And I haven't seen my son in months and months and months. You know, so
you pay
exactly
you pay the fee in your county, in your state, Illinois. You pay the fee because not every state does this, but they charge you. A lot of states do. So they charge. So you're in the middle of a custody battle, and the state is charging you for the automatic. For the judge appoints an attorney for the child, which would be the guardian ad litem in your case.
Right.
And now you. Does mom have to pay too, or just dad?
That is split down the middle. It is split 50-50, and that's better than 100%. So that kind of incentivizes. I can see where it could incentivize parents to say, "Hey, we should resolve this," because we don't want to pay all this money. This is crazy. So I could see how that high rate could incentivize parents to resolve things without the courts. However, when you have someone who is hell bent on whatever their motives are, and their very vindictive motives, when you have someone who has an agenda there, that's not someone you can resolve a situation with without the court system. So you're basically forced to go through this and see. Now, as I spoke on behalf of like non-custodial parents like myself, we are so. For instance, yes, we have to pay 50%. She has to pay 50%. Including I was ordered to supervise visitation. So that we have to hire a supervisor. She's ordered to pay 50% of that as well. So that's another, I guess, incentive to work.
It's incentive for the courts to make money. I don't know how much incentive it is for people to resolve their issues, but go ahead.
And from my personal perspective, the problem with paying 50-50 here is now, like I mentioned, I've been out of my child's life for years and years and years, and this is an abusive relationship. You know, this is something that is reoccurring. There's patterns here. This is very narcissistic. And so essentially when I see it, when I go and I pay the $100-some to this supervisor to supervise this visitation with my son for just a few hours, I give her a check, and his mother gives her a check. And so essentially how I see that from my position is I'm paying now to see my child, and she's paying to abuse me and my child or our child further. And so it's almost like when you have someone who is so hell-bent on narcissistic tendencies who are using and utilizing the court system to abuse the other parent and the child inadvertently, they have no problem paying that. They say, yeah, if I can just put up $100 and I get to abuse this person further and I don't even have to interact with them, well, of course, then it incentivizes more abuse. So now you're further separating the child non-custodial parent relationship further and further and further, where on paper it looks, oh yeah, you know, there's contact, there's this, but it's not. It's actually making it worse. And so when you have that, I have to pay that. I have to pay the GAL stuff. I have to pay the child support stuff. I have to pay, all these different fees. And again, I don't have an attorney. That'd be an entirely different ballgame. So I'm having to pay all these fees. Well, they don't look at, hey, I still have rent. I still have a car payment. I still have to live my life. I still have to buy food. I can't go outside and eat grass. You know, so we're looking you're draining these people and just completely, just pounding them into the ground. And that's why, and I don't quote me on this, but I believe the statistic is that's why 24 people, predominantly fathers, kill themselves every single day in this country that have no access or very little access to their children. 24 people a day. I mean, I don't know what that's comparable to in terms of like drug or alcohol or anything like that kills people, cancer. But that's a pretty alarming number, and that's because these people are being beaten into the ground and have no means of support. Like I said in the beginning of this conversation, I had mentioned that this is very isolating. A lot of people can't handle it. A lot of even family and stuff, friends, they separate from us because we have so much stuff going on in our lives and so much stress. So you have all of that, and then you have no support. So now you have your thousands of dollars in debt. You're being threatened with jail time. You have no access to your child whatsoever, and you have no support system. What do you do?
When was the last time you saw your son?
A lot of people put a gun in their mouth.
I know stats are there. They definitely are there, and I absolutely even have personal accounts of people that I know. So it's a tremendous, it's a terrible stain on our American culture that what we're doing to families and what we're doing to fathers specifically. I want to know what the guardian ad litem said in the papers. Like, what's her beef against you? Guardian's beef against
enough,
you? Why dad can't see son? And before you answer that, how long has it been since you've seen your son?
I'll answer that question first. I saw him 2 months ago. It was a paid supervised visitation, and it cost me about $125. That's including the fee and then gas to get there. It's a two-hour drive back for me. It's a four-hour drive round trip. It would cost me about
$125. Has he been alienated from you as well? Is he alienated?
To expand. So before that, so I saw him then with the supervised visitation. Before that, it was 10 months that I went without seeing him. Before that, her and I had lived together. We tried to, you know, cut out a lot of cost and things like that. So we tried to live together after several years of alienation and whatnot. And, of course, it didn't work. It actually kind of hindered me, but I will never say that I regret doing that, because it was the only 10 months that we lived together for 10 months. It's the only 10 months that I got to spend with my son. That's it. So before that, I didn't see him at all. Zero. Like, there was a couple
what
of
happened with
there,
so I want to know, what is it that they're
this,
complaining
and this is not,
about?
And this is not despite going through court. I was going through court all of this throughout this entire period.
Okay. Yeah. I got you.
Right. Yeah. So we have, you know, I didn't meet him until he was 2 years old for the first time ever. And during that 2 years, I was in court every month. So we're being ordered to mediations. We're being ordered to counseling. We're being ordered to do.
Why did you not know she had the baby, or like what went out? What happened there? What started the custody battle?
In the very beginning, you know, we didn't date very long. And then when she got pregnant, there was some conflict, and she ended up leaving. And I want to say I had known she was pregnant for about 3 days, and then she left. And that was the last time I seen her until I took her to court. I don't know, I'd say a year or so later when we actually, or maybe it was about 8 months later when we actually got a court date. But I fought. Now this is now, if anybody's listening who is maybe just starting this process, just a few days after he was born that I found out, not from her, but from one of her friends, just a few days after he was born, I filed, and you can do this online. I filed what's called a putative father's report or something like that. Putative. And what that basically means is that if your name's in the registry, that if they try to put that child up for adoption or something like that, then you have the legal right to go and challenge that and claim paternity and things like that. But anyway, so I did that just very, very shortly after he was born. And after that, yeah, like I said, it took about 2 years to actually meet him in court. And I will give her some credit here. That was not actually ordered by the judge. She did that on her own accord. She brought our son into the courtroom for one of our mediation sessions. And interestingly enough, the mediator scolded her and said, "You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to bring the child." And I had thought, wow, I haven't met my son. He's almost 2 years old. I haven't met my son ever. This is the first time I'm ever meeting him, not ordered by a judge, and we're being scolded by the mediator. So what does that tell you about the system that is, you know, I just told you this is like a milestone in my life, and you're yelling at us saying we're not, that's against the rules. Well, piss on your rules. You know, sorry if I can't say that, but you know, at that point it's like, you know, so anyway, yeah,
it seems to me that she's pretty amicable with you, you know, more or less. I mean, I understand that she kept it from you. You find out from someone else he's born, you take the steps you have to take to go to court. Why is it that you guys can't just come to a reasonable, you know, maybe 50-50 agreement, 50% time with dad, 50% time with mom? Like, why couldn't you just go to court and make a reasonable agreement between the two of you?
Sure. One reason, I believe, is that the court encourages conflict. You had mentioned this earlier in the conversation where, you know, these people, their paychecks rely on us coming back to court. So if they enhance conflict resolution and actually get to the bottom of things and make things better, they don't get a paycheck. That's job security. So when we keep coming to court, so they enable that, essentially, is what I'm saying, is that the state and the courts, they exacerbate the conflict. They actually encourage conflict because it keeps us coming back.
And they were successful in doing that. So it puts
Absolutely.
Mom and dad in conflict, and this has been going on just about 5 years. What is the guardian?
One thing I'll say, you know, I believe in certain things about inherent human nature, and I would say that, you know, most people aren't thieves. But if you leave the right opportunity for even an honest person, they may be tempted to steal. So when you put a good or a bad person, I won't attest to her character. I don't believe that's really what I'm here to talk about. But when you put a good or a bad person in a position where they can manipulate and abuse someone else, and they can do it legally, and they can profit from it, et cetera, well, it's very tempting to take advantage of. So that's what's happening, and that's a systematic oppression of men and fathers in this country, is that the courts are enabling this. They are absolutely doing that. So anyway, to answer your next question with the GAO, interestingly enough, the GAO has never given a bad report. She has everything she's ever said in terms of my supervised visitations, in terms of her meeting with me at my house with my son, all of these things and all these interactions have all been positive. So this is why, for the life of me, I can't figure out what her purpose is, because if she's given all positive reviews about me and my living situation and my demeanor, my attitude, the relationship that I have with my son, if they're all positive, why am I still being kept from my son? However, she does come to court. She sits there during hearings, and she doesn't say a word, and she's billing. It's like a taxi driver. The meter's running. And so she sits there, and there's very little work. One thing I will say, which I do not understand, and maybe an attorney may be able to explain this to me better, but I've sent her several emails basically begging for her to pay attention to what's happening to the narcissistic behavior and the abuse and the alienation over the years and the patterns that happen. Due to the alienation, and they're very repetitive and they're very observable. And I've emailed her. She doesn't actually read the emails. She doesn't respond to the emails, but she bills for them. So I don't understand that at all. So in my opinion, and again, this is not on a personal level to the GAL or anyone else, but in my personal or professional opinion, the GAL is essentially just an additional litigant, a third party litigant, that the courts, the GAL and the judge, they buddy up and they rub shoulders. And this is like, hey, I can make you some money. We'll just appoint you as the child representative, quote unquote, and we'll get you like 10, 20 grand out of that one. You know, these people can't work it out, so let's throw another litigant in there. We'll make some money. Because in my opinion, she's not actually representing the child. If she were representing the child, this wouldn't be happening right now. You know, my son talks about he doesn't understand why he can't see me. He doesn't understand why he's not allowed to come over.
I don't understand either. I don't blame him.
I don't either.
So what
I don't either.
What
I don't blame him, right?
Yeah,
so
when you go to court,
representing the child in that sense.
When you've gone to the hearings, Ryan, and you've applied to the judge or asked the judge about visitation, I mean, what exactly do they – why are they not letting you have visitation without all these fees? Why are you having supervised visitation at all when there's no
– at first.
There's no criminal
–
you know, as you
absolutely.
Said, there's
so
nothing
at,
criminal
well,
going on
first,
here. Why do you have to have supervised visit? It doesn't make sense.
At first, it's always about agreement. If the custodial parent – which is her, the mother, doesn't agree, then they can't force anything to happen. So that's why all the mediations occurred. That's why all the counseling occurred and this and that. They didn't actually order. And I asked the judge, I asked him almost every single court day, why can't I see my son? What is going on? Why am I still here fighting and nothing is happening? Why is that? Why is this abuse allowed to occur? And they said, well, we'll get there. You know, baby steps. I'm always told baby steps. You need to get more jobs. You need to work harder. You want to be a litigant. You want to, file your case, but you don't want to pay any money. Well, I don't have any money and I've been drained completely dry, but anyway, I'm getting a little off track there. Then again, I don't want to speak too much about, personal things that have happened or what about in terms of the case, but an incident happened last year about this time, where there was a domestic issue. And my son and myself were attacked by the custodial parent. And some of it was on video. Now, one thing I've learned very quickly is that the police do not care, especially if it's a woman against a man. It's old way of doing things, and men are, they're kind of looked at like, well, it's your fault, she's lying. No, you did this, whatever. So there was an instance that happened there, and I recorded a lot of it. Now, anybody watching this, any normal person watching this, and I've been told 1,000 times that she did attack you. You know, this was absolutely abusive. That was battery. She should have gone to jail for it. But when the judge watched it, he looked at it like I was the aggressor because my parenting time was being trampled on. It was a court order. I had parenting time, and she came to ambush me with her friends and family, attacked us, and then when the police came, they actually let me keep my son here because it was my parenting time. So instead of looking at the fact that she interfered with my parenting time and broke a court order or set up an ambush and aggressively handled this situation, they looked at my response, and my response was very angry. I was yelling. I was scared. I was scared that if she took my son, I would never see him again, because that's what's happened before in the past several times. Every time she is able to get her way, it stays that way, and I don't get to see my son for months and years at a time. And I was right. Once it all came down in the brass tacks and she got her protective order and she got the police and everybody on her side, I then haven't seen my son substantially. Now, like I said, I had a supervised visitation a couple of months ago, but that was for 2 hours at the mall, and I had somebody breathing over my shoulder. Before that, I haven't seen my son since August 8th of 2018.
Does she? You know, does your ex-girlfriend have another man in her life, or is like she not doing well?
Well,
I happen to think, like, after all these years, after all these years, Ryan, why still the vindictive, fighting, stipulate, you know, in other words, not coming to the table with you, you know, doing the right thing, being an adult, coming to an agreement, making it fair so son can see dad. Why? What is holding her back?
This is just my personal opinion about the situation, but this is not – a lot of people ask you, why can't you just work things out with her? Why does she hate you so much? I don't believe that she hates me. I don't believe that she has, like, this burning resentment towards me. I think that she's angry or reluctant to do things because she's mad that I stuck around. So because I stepped up and I said, I want to be this child's father, and I am this child's father, but I want to be and I want to play the fatherly role to this child and have a relationship with him. Well, that didn't really set well with her. That didn't play into her cards because she had this kind of pieced together, framed image of what she wants out of life, what her future looks like. So, you know, you had mentioned relationships. And this started out, there was one relationship in the beginning with her, and, you know, he was playing daddy, and they played house for a couple of years. And when I finally started getting a little more leeway and further into court, I feel like that caused a little bit of conflict on their relationship, and I started to then have more of a relationship with my son. Then it all got a little bit better, and then it all went to hell. So it happened again. Exactly the same way it happened before, it happened again. She moved out. She got another serious relationship, and now that serious relationship that she's in is now playing the other parent. She's playing the role of the parent. So at this point, I'm noticing a pattern here. So now it's more about property and possession than it is about what's in the best interest of the child. This is about what do I want for my life, and my son belongs to me. So if I'm with someone and I'm serious about being with that person, then that person is my property, my son's parent. So the biological parent doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything to her. It's about her. It's about selfish. It's about, you know, what does she want? So, again, these patterns are reoccurring. This is not the second time that this has happened. And it will happen. It will continue to happen. And these are all things, all these things that I've told you. These are all things that I've told the GAL. I've told the supervisors. I told the judge, and I'm ignored. And so, you know, that's when I realized that it was absolutely a systematic financial agenda. It's about how we can keep these people in conflict to keep taking their money so we can perpetuate our kangaroo court is essentially what's happening.
So at this stage, I just want to fast forward a little bit to bring you up to where you are right now. Right now, you have $3,000 in arrears. Is that child support arrears, or is that payment for the gal, or what exactly do you owe that they want you to pay?
Right.
Otherwise, they're threatening.
So, as I mentioned earlier, we had lived together. Before we lived together, I was ordered to pay child support, and I had PayPal receipts. I actually sent it wasn't through the state. It wasn't through the disbursement unit. I paid her personally. I paid her weekly, and I had receipts for all the payments that I had made. And so after that, then we started to get along a little bit better. And, you know, I was buying things too. So it was like you know, I'm buying him clothes and buying him food and things like that. I'm taking care of him when he's with me. And then we moved in together. So then when we moved in together, okay, now I'm contributing towards the bills, towards the rent, the utilities, groceries, you know, et cetera, clothes that are on his back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In my opinion, that's child support. If child support is supposed to support the child, that's what I was doing. I was supporting the child, and he lived in the same house. So recently, her attorney filed a motion to enforce a child support order, and they basically went in and said all the PayPal fees or all the PayPal payments, they're null and void because we can't prove that they were for child support. And she says they weren't, and you say they are, so whatever. And then they did not
include
any of the time
that we were living.
She went back
on her word about that child support?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's well, it's because she can. It's because she was given the opportunity, like I had mentioned, about a thief earlier. You know, maybe not everybody's a thief, but you put an honest person in a situation where they can be a thief and get away with it, and you don't know. You never know. So they let her do this. They let her get away with this, and then so she took advantage of it. More money for her in her pocket. And they didn't include any of that stuff. They didn't include any of the time that we were living together. They said the child support order was running concurrent and that none of that counted. So then her attorney says he owes, I don't know the number.
Excuse me, Ryan, but at that point, did you have an attorney representing you who could? You've been pro se?
I've been pro se all 6 years that this has been going on, aside from 2 months. I actually had a fundraiser. I have hired an attorney. He screwed me over worse than I have ever done by myself. So I fired him, and that was the end of that. So, no, I did not have an attorney. But anyway, back to, you know, what I was saying about the money. So
this built up quite a bit of arrears after you've already spent money in child support, but you were living with her. You had your own arrangements going on. Yeah, and then she claimed you didn't do it and so on. That's just the really terrible. I'm very sorry to hear all of that.
Right. Well, what's worse on it? Now listen to this.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, so now you have these child support. So they came up with this arbitrary number. It was like $5,675 or something like that. You know, $5,675. And then they said because it was running concurrent since 2 years ago, there is a 12% interest rate attached to that. So $5,675 just turned into $6,820 or something like that. And so what they did then is the judge ordered that. He says, okay, I'm going to order that. That's going to stick. That's now the number that you owe in arrears. It wasn't based on any evidence. It wasn't based on any logic. I showed evidence. I showed evidence of payments, and that I showed a lease agreement that we lived together, and, you know, receipts and all these things. It was ignored. It was completely ignored because the judges get kickbacks on this stuff. They, like I said, keep that conflict going. It's perpetual conflict. So I was stuck with this number, and it ended up being like $6,700. And the judge says, well, you're going to pay a minus the interest. You're going to pay 50% of that by your next court date. I'm giving you 45 days, which my next court date will be May 15th. And so I have till the May 15th to come up with $2,500. Now, that's not all, though. I was also ordered to do anger management classes. Based on the incident that happened last year where I was attacked while I was holding my son because of the video, because of me yelling, because of the video that the judge saw, he thought that I was angry and that I should be punished so that I have to do now anger management classes. Well, that's $200, and that has to be done. Now, I've already established everything. I've already set up the all of it. I just have to now pay the guy, you know, the place to do it. So that's $200. And then I'm also ordered to pay the GAL $250 per month. Standing balance is like $5,000 or $4,000. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but I'm supposed to pay $250 towards that, and that's monthly. So by the time I go into court, I have to have $3,000. That's just for court. Now, that's child support arrears, that this arbitrary number that they came up with and the judge agreed with. You know, that wasn't a real number. That should not have been anywhere near that number. But that's, I pay 50% of that. And that's a contempt finding. So if I don't pay it, I go to jail. I have to pay the GAL fee, and I have to pay the anger management courses, and that's $200. So that comes to about $3,000 or $3,050, something like that. Now, keep in mind, that isn't in that, and that's 45 days. Now, I live paycheck to paycheck. I live day by day. I'm not a rich person. I don't have, you know, thousands in my savings. I don't have any support structure, support network, and, you know, so that doesn't include my rent or my car payment or, you know, anything, nothing. It doesn't, or my phone. I'm talking to you on my phone that I have to pay monthly. That doesn't include that. That doesn't include food. It doesn't include internet. It doesn't include anything. That is just what I have to come up with to stay out of jail. If I don't have it, when I go
to ask you something, I
got to
ask you something about the Ryan. There is federal law that says, and I think I posted on your Facebook page a couple of times. There's federal law that says when a state is taking away child support money, there must be a parenting schedule in place. And when I say parenting schedule, I mean a visitation parenting schedule in place. In other words, the federal court said that the parent who's paying the child support has to have visitation rights with the child.
Right.
You know, does anybody make that argument, or, you know, do they just turn a blind eye to federal law?
Here's the catch-22. They have ordered that I have visitation. If I want to, not necessarily, I'll rephrase, not if I want to, I would love to. If I'm able, I am entitled to have a visitation with my son once a week for 4 hours maximum with a certified supervisor in a public location where the supervisor
can. Yeah, and you can't afford it, and it's 2 hours.
And how much does that cost? That's going to cost me about $1,000 a month. If I want to do every single one that I'm so-called entitled to that's issued by the court order, that's another $1,000 a month. That's what I pay in rent. That's my rent. I pay $1,000 a month. So just to pay to see my son is what I pay in rent to keep a roof over my head and keep my money flowing and keep me, you know, not living on the streets. I have to pay that to see my son. Well, I can't do that. So, and as a result, I don't see my son.
I understand.
So that's the catch-22. They've ordered it, but I can't afford it, so I don't get to.
You guys have a call.
Have you gone to local media at all with respect to this?
The local media, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't cut you off.
Yeah, that's okay. And what have they said? What was their response?
I haven't got a response. I've contacted every local, and like I said, I've been doing this 6 years. I've contacted everybody there is to contact. I've contacted Bar Association. I've contacted private attorneys. I've contacted civil rights attorneys. I have, you know, I did some activism a few years ago, and I got really involved with a lot of the media and things like that. So I actually had meet people in ABC News and NBC News on my Facebook page, and I reached out to them, and I was ignored. I got no response when I told my story. So the funny thing is that I find very repetitive or, you know, consistent rather, is that I'm constantly looking for assistance, looking for help, and I'm unable to find it. But everybody seems to sympathize, but no one actually wants to act. Nobody wants to really talk about this situation. And in my opinion, the reason they don't do it on the media, they don't care about this situation, is because it doesn't bring viewership. It's not good for ratings. We're talking about something so horrible where you're separating and ripping children out of literally and figuratively ripping children out of parents, loving parents' arms, beating them into submission financially, emotionally, psychologically. And these people, you know, there's people killing themselves. There's people that, and again, you had mentioned, you know, the effects that this has on the child or the children. It doesn't look good. It looks horrible. Why isn't anybody talking about this? Well, because it doesn't bring viewership. It doesn't make those networks money. That's what they operate around. So the ones that I've been able to get on are shows like yours, you know, alternative media, where people are actually interested, and their incentive for having the show is not to make a profit, not to make money or as much money as they can based on advertisements and you know, things like that. So
bad things happen to sell, but I happen to think that it's more of bigger people in charge. A reporter myself, I have written stories, family court stories, and I've been published in alternate media for those stories, and those stories have gotten a lot of attention. So that the stuff itself, what I've seen, my experience, is that it's a bigger entity putting the pressure on the publishers, not so much the reporters, but the publishers. So they're like,
that's
we don't awesome. Want you to talk about bad about the government agency, you know, which or the
right.
or the courts. And I just think it's pressure from the media. The media, you know, like the bigger the powers that be,
the puppet
they
masters.
Don't want
yeah,
the, it. They don't want yeah. it in the media.
No, they don't, because I mean, I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but the you know, the family court industry is a multi-billion dollar industry per year. They make billions of dollars off of us, and we fund it. And that's an idea that I've kind of toyed with. It's like, you know, if we all just stood up together, all of us alienated, oppressed parents, and we stood up together and just said no more, well, they wouldn't be able to fund themselves anymore. They are able to do what they're doing to us, and because we're paying for them to do it to us. So
yes, you're not the first person I've heard say that. And I do know parents that have just stopped it and just have removed themselves from the situation because it was easy. It was not that it's easier, because it's never easy being apart from your child, but that
almost a necessity.
It's the idea
of
self-feeding the system where you're getting nowhere. So you're feeding a system that's
nowhere.
Not helping you.
Yeah, you're fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, and it's completely pointless. You know, like I said, you know, the GAL has never given a bad report on me. She says, you know, all positive things, but she doesn't say, hey, I think that, you know, it's funny in the beginning when I first met her, when I had regular contact, you know, during when we were still living together and whatnot, or she had just moved out, and she, I had argued that I wanted an extra weekend, and she says, no, I think it's very important that the child has equal weekends with both parents. All the time. And so that was her position in the beginning. And now here we are, and I haven't seen my son in months and months and months. And now that's not her position anymore. Now the child, it doesn't matter what the child, if it's best for the child to see the parent every other weekend or whatever. Now it's just, well, give the custodial parent whatever the hell she wants. And we're just going to, so they put on a show. It's all theater. They put on this big act and they all wear masks and they dance around and they sign papers and it's all for show to take your money to make it look and seem like it's legitimate. And it's not. It's actually very – all of it is very unconstitutional. The court in and of itself is unconstitutional inherently. There, you know, when you have – you're denying a biological no harm that has shown no tendencies for criminal or, you know, whatever, and you're denying that inherent parental biological right, that – is the antithesis of the pursuit of liberty and happiness, you know? So that is everything that the forefathers of this country fought against, and it's happening every single day to millions and millions of Americans in this country. The terrorists are here at home, you know? So
yeah, it's tyranny. I mean, it's tyranny when a government comes into your family life and tells you what to do. And the thing is that when the law says that when a fit parent is available, the court has to remove. I mean, the government has to remove themselves. So the fit parent is available. Bye bye. Where I think Illinois goes really dead wrong in other states too. It's this idea that you're in this arena, this civil court arena of you versus somebody else, and somehow you become the bad guy for nothing. You're just the dad, right? You're not the bad guy. And all of a sudden you need this supervised. What I find so astonishing about the whole thing is that this supervised visit, maintaining the supervised visit at the rate that they're asking you to pay. I mean, who can afford that? And then why is it? Where? In what kind of country can you call free that the government charges you? They're charging you. To see your own son for visitation. How do you get this whole supervised visitation lifted? Can you even?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm in the wrong business. I should have got into the family court system years ago, and I'd be filthy, disgusting rich beyond my wildest dreams. Can I get it lifted? I will. It's funny that you asked that. I asked the judge at our last court date, it was about a month or so ago, Judge, what's the end of the light? What's the light at the end of the tunnel here? How long do I have to do this? How long do I have to do the counseling that I've been ordered to do? How long do I have to be supervised? Well, he says, well, I can't give you that answer. He basically just said that it'll – whenever we feel like it, whatever I say is essentially what it comes down to is could be forever. And I asked the supervisor to say – and, you know, she was a nice woman. I don't know her personally, but she seemed okay. And I asked her the same question, and she says, you know, I've had people do this for 14 years. I had been a father's supervisor for 14 years, and I don't know the details of that case or why it lasted so long, But they didn't give me much hope, because that is really? To say that I will not have a relationship with my son at all unless it's supervised, like I'm a child and I need my hand held. Whereas just last year, you know, when we were living together, I was with my son every single day. I was the primary parent. I worked from home. She went and did her job, you know, 45 minutes away, and I stayed with our son, and I raised him. I potty trained him by myself, single-handedly. So how can you say that a parent, a father, is unfit or needs to be supervised and have his hand held when just a year ago he was spending 100% of the time with that child, schooling that child, raising that child, feeding that child, clothing that child, wiping that child's butt, you know, every single day, three times a day, and now suddenly I'm this vilified, horrible, awful, violent, aggressive, you know, just disgusting person. I'm not a father anymore. I'm an ATM, and I'm somebody that they can attack to perpetuate their game, to perpetuate their financial racket. It's what it is. It's a racket. And honestly, it is a racket defined by the legal terms of what a racket is. That is the family court system. So, again, it is all about money.
Do you think there's any way, you know, and I agree with you, and you make a lot of good points, Ryan. Do you think that there's any way that you can, you know, take her to the side, you know, one-on-one, let's talk about this, let's talk about what our actions are doing to our own son, as far as keeping you apart, and the money, the you know, the fees, because she's paying fees too. It's just not just you.
Yeah.
And the fees also are just taking money away from your lives
from
and
him.
your son. And is there any way, do you think, she would be agreeable to just exiting the whole picture? Because I got to tell you something. I was a young bride. I was a teen bride, and I was also divorced at 25 years old. And I had two sons, or separated. And I had two sons with my first husband, and I and you know, we didn't get along, okay? You know, we wanted to separate, but at that time I was young, but I was smart enough to know that I needed him and my kids needed him. So we made an agreement outside of court. One lawyer hired, and we reached an agreement, and it was agreeable to both of us, and we didn't even go to court before a judge. And boom, we got our divorce. It was almost, it sounds simple. Of course, it's never so simple, but at the end of the day, my boys had their dad, and that was good for me because that gave me a chance to have the weekends off. It gave me a chance that, you know, they were very busy with sports and after school activities.
Well, the kids are overall happier.
And I was at work, and you know, we had a routine going on, my ex and I, with the boys. They're both adults now, but we had a routine going on that was, you know, workable. But the best part about it was, without it, in my mind, with in retrospect, without him in their lives and without him in my life, as far as organizing these two kids, it would have been all alone. It would have been terrible. It would have been terrible for me. It would have been terrible for the boys. It just made a whole lot of sense to move in that direction on being agreeable to being to co-parenting than fighting over, you know, Saturday night or something.
Well, and that, you know, that does happen. Yeah. That does happen, and a lot of parents can do that. And unfortunately, you know, you had mentioned, you know, that if you didn't do that, then you would have been alone. You've been kind of on that by yourself. Like I mentioned earlier, this is not someone I will preface by saying that's something that I would absolutely love to do. I do not desire conflict. I'm not looking for conflict. I would love to have this resolved and go back to living my normal life. And the money that I make and the work that I put into everything actually goes towards something. Like, I've got a big old antique glass carboy. It's like a big 5-gallon water jug, and I'm throwing my silver change in it. And if I don't see my son until he's 18, then that's when I'll give it to him. And that's going to go towards – that's going to go to him. That's going to be his college fund or his small business fund or his I want to travel to Europe fund or whatever. So, I'm doing that on the side, but this is something – that is, again, she's being enabled to do this. And that, again, this is something I would love to do. I would love to sit down with her and just talk this over and be done. But I don't believe that can be be done because I've already tried that. One of the conversations we had a few months ago was I kind of sat down and wrote down every financial aspect of this long term. So if we have, say we have one court date a month and the GAL charges this much per month and this is this and this is this and da 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 da. By the end of the year, we ended up spending like $50,000, $60,000 on this. So we got to do this for – my son just turned 5, so that's 13 more years until he's legally an adult. So you add all that together, and it ended up being almost like $1 million or something in that outrageous ballpark. And I thought, you know,
wow.
Can you believe the money that we're putting into this? You really won't just sit down and talk to me. You want to spend that money for what? $1 million can go, and it wasn't exactly $1 million. I'm rounding up a little bit, but it was up there.
Right.
And I thought you wouldn't rather put that $1 million into him, into his college fund, into just a bank account. Buy gold and put it buried underground in the backyard for all I care. But you'd rather give that money to these people, I hate to say it, but these parasites that are sitting in these government offices, you'd rather give it to them than give it to your own son to perpetuate conflict with me. And that didn't make any sense to me. And it now, but it does now, because I've realized what the situation is. This is not somebody who is interested in conflict resolution. This is someone who suffers from a personality disorder. This is narcissistic personality disorder. You cannot co-parent, or it's very difficult to co-parent with a narcissist, because this person is not interested in empathy. They're not really interested in what's in the best interest of their own child. They're interested in what's good for them and the fantasies or the delusions of grandeur that they see, that they hold inside themselves. So when I could present something like that, and I would essentially be laughed at. So no, that is not a possibility. So where we're sitting now is my only possibility. My options are either keep fighting until it kills me, which is what's happening. It's completely destroying my life. I'm stressed out every day. I'm developing this just intense anxiety all the time. It's continuously draining me and ruining my life. So that's one option. I can keep fighting. Or I could walk away and have absolutely zero rights to my child, never see him again. Maybe when he's an adult, he might come find me, whatever, something like that. Those are all maybes, possibilities. I can do that, but then I have to live with that. I have to live with the regret and the idea that I basically gave up my son because I couldn't fight. What kind of man did that make me?
We're coming down to
jump off a bridge.
Program. We're coming down to the end of the program, Ryan. I'm so glad that you came on. I want you to come back again and give us an update on what's going on. But we just have about 2 minutes to go. What I'd like you to do is just tell the listeners if they want to reach out to you, if they have any ideas, or if they want to help you out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do not have a fundraiser at the moment, but I'm selling hoodies and T-shirts and things like that, trying to raise money. You're able to leave. You can reach out to me at facebook.com/IRYNScott. So IRYNScott, and that's my Facebook handle. You can reach me on there. I'm not one person to ask. I don't like asking for help. I don't like begging, but I also don't want to sit in jail, because if I sit in jail, I lose the house, I lose the car, I lose any possibility of ever fighting for my son. If you would like to donate to my cause via PayPal, a lot of people like to do PayPal, you can send it to ryan.scott.yt, as in YouTube, at gmail.com. So ryan.scott.yt at gmail.com. And that would help exponentially, because, like I said, if I go to jail, I'm useless to myself and to my son. And this is an exorbitant amount of money that I don't see myself being able to come up with. And I'm at my wit's end here, my rope's end. So I appreciate anybody who, even if you'd like to just reach out to me for conversation, I would love to even just speak with somebody if anybody's interested in talking. So.
Okay, awesome. Thanks so much for that, Ryan. And thanks again for coming on the show. I think the more people that hear about it and the more people that can sympathize and
sure.
and hopefully be helpful. And I'm gonna contact you privately as well. And I have some ideas in my head to get it out in the
fantastic.
Public. God bless you all and have a wonderful Easter weekend. It was nice
Thank
talking
you very
to you,
much.
Ryan. Good night, everybody.
You also. Good night. Thank you. Bye.